technical equipment, is that okay? Hi everybody, great to be here, thanks Paul. I'm just going to start with a poem that I wrote about a kid who was interviewed on the TV. His mom had passed away from a heroin overdose, and the interviewer said, "What's it like, you know, without your mom?" And he said, "It's all right, but I can't ask my dad for nothing." So it's called "I Can't Ask Me Dad." I can't ask me dad for nothing, not for nothing, not for pajamas or Calpol or Mr. Freeze or fishes and calculators, PlayStation games. I can't ask me dad for nothing, not for nothing, not for a Capri Sun or socks or where babies come from, or runners or an electric guitar or how to spell mother or mammy. She's in her new home with Kevin, in the sky with Kevin, in the sky with Kevin. Mammy's in the sky with Kevin. Oh, from the ska. The ska said to Kevin, that's what me dad says. Me dad doesn't like Kevin. So now I can't ask him for nothing, not nothing. I can't ask me dad for nothing.
Okay guys, I'm going to write a poem called To a Ghost. And I get on very well with the dead. And is it too loud? Hey, how do you turn it down?
Move away from
it. Move away from it, like this, yeah?
Actually, hold on.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, that's better, thanks. Okay guys, a lot of us have, I presume, like me, a lot of us have people who have passed away that we've lost over the years and who come to speak to us. Or at least the version of them that we have in our power drive comes to speak to us at strange times, late at night when we're tired, all that kind of thing. And I have, I have a lot of ghosts, but there's one particular ghost who I have been having a sort of a long-term argument with at strange times, and that's what this poem is about. And it's called To a Ghost. How would you, who had no shield, stand guard for me? What way would you cleanse when you never got a leg up from the muck? And what kind of guide would you make when you stumbled one-eyed in the half-life all your life? And why should you forgive when you never got a decent shot at sin? It's too stupid even to talk to you. You do not listen. You are not there. Not a lookout perching on my shoulder. No becoming whispers in my sleepless midnight ear. Your only haunting is a question, and it permeates the air. Though I can never answer, and you will never tell for what, my angel, do you come here? For what, my ghost, did you live?
I hope I can project like that. I'd like to actually, this is the first time I've ever read this poem, it's called Cork, and I was actually literally, we're just off Oliver Plunkett Street, so I was actually literally beaten up outside the GPO back in 2000, and I'm sorry, it's really angry, and maybe it's a little bit, it's not meant to be disparaging about Cork, but I wrote it in a really angry place when I moved to Galway. I actually moved out of here after that. Saturday night near marching season, knee trembling experiences, a full peep show on Panna. Outside Waterstone, where half a day earlier, pretty children ate vanilla ice cream and froze the dreams of ducks they fed at the Mar Dyke with stale glass and cake bread. Suburbanised rockers spat abuse and rolled their skinny tight asses to the city for the tear, foolish fucks. I strolled down piss-riddled streets through a gauntlet of commons to another country where already I'm dead and unburied, where I'm nothing but teeth and charred rind in a clearing, or I'm nailed to the wall in an outhouse, arms akimbo, legs spread, unidentifiable to all but the chief of the rapist police. My accent didn't suit your cocklier boy, like your flea cock for the Erskine bitches you chew. kicks on an empty stomach with cheap pimp market shoes. Well, you could pimp me to a necrophilist because I'd drown in congealed blood before I'd ever let you have me. I'm left on the path up Oliver Plunkett Street. I taught your kids. They asked me about my scars.
And I promise you faithfully, you won't last too long. 'Cause I'm the one they're all out about when they're drinking their fucking coffee above in Sullivan's Cafe. I'm the one that ripped the fax machine down off the wall above in Bernie's Lounge. I'm the light that spreads myself out on a bench of a summer's day with me pot belly out, sucking a flagging and fucking and blinding anyone who'll be passing. 'Cause I'm fearless, fucking fearless. Last Friday I got steamed above in Cork. I got fucked out of Henry's for biting some young fella's ear off. Well, as I was passing up beyond the viaduct, I got a mad taxi to run out in the road, and I screamed into the headlights, oh, I'm fearless, fucking fearless. I'm the laziest old bollocks that ever you met, but I'd ate your fucking eyeballs in a shot. I'm barred from every pub in town and every bookies too, but I'd walk to Tipperary for a drink and a bet. I'd walk to Tipperary for a drink and a bet. 'Cause I'm fearless! Fucking fearless! Doubt me now! Watch me go, so! Till I leap up onto the counter like a pure fucking tiger, and I kick the head one by one off the beer tats, and I watch myself in the big brown mirror as I dance in the blood and the fountains of beer. I will dance in the blood and the fountains of beer, 'cause I'm fearless, fucking fearless.
About an aerobics class, and the woman that was running the aerobics class was hilarious, the things she came out with, and actually it's literally what she said. I just wrote it down because I used to get such a laugh. We go there and we just stand up and she'd tell us about her husband and everything that was going around in Galway. Nobody lost any weight and I just couldn't afford to go back to, but it was so funny. But this is what she said. It's called Urban Myths and the Galway Girl. She tells us that we jump about like idiots. It was so cold this morning, I thought the Holocaust was coming. And she just failed her driving test again, because she couldn't follow around a rear window. Sure, that's a ridiculous thing to do. She'd be in the sea, because he brought her around Ballylong, and that's no place to be. She loves the way the globe is warming, loving. The heat is lovely. She had a crush on a bus driver who took the Castle on Air Square to sketch for a quick one saw till route. But she ended up as a TV repairman that came to fix her father's Ferguson once a year. He told her that this Christmas she needed to tart herself up. That bastard. Ah, but they like bling and re-royal and love you, so I'll probably tart myself out there, even if he's a fat bastard. Sure, you have to keep them happy. But lately, she muses, she's gone right off the husband. Ah, he walks around the house in tracksuit pants, loving with his sweaty limp bollocks hanging sideways. It's enough to turn a nun off. But he's great for painting and cleaning out her ashes all the same. She tells me her youngest with autism is growing out of it. And again about the foreign nationals who left the buggy at the bus stop. Only this time she said it in Saltilla, not Merview, because she is the queen of urban myths. Ah, she wishes she had a car, then she could get 5 grand for taxiing that these coloured lads are getting. quote unquote, she's saying coloured because she knows I'm a bit funny about racism. She tells us about Jimmy, her boss. That's complicated, she says. You have to let him think he has one up on you, and then you have one up on him, and then you're one up, I think. She's 4 stone loving, she's an overactive thyroid, an underactive husband, a touch of type 2 diabetes, an overactive daughter, the odd outbreak of psoriasis, a query of meningococcal cock something, and definite insanity. Everywhere in Galway waters down her vodka. She'll tell Pauline that Christine is a wench, and then she'll tell Christine that Pauline is loose. She'll cook for her sons, but not for her daughters. She tells me all the pills husband is taking for the cough and the lipstick and all that, nothing's working. Now she couldn't care of me when she's asleep. She's fond of the new Pope, loving, I got the look of him. Fond of roundabouts, loving, the 50% off at Tesco's. She thinks Billy on EastEnders, he did very well for himself, loving, but Jesus, they should drown game from curry. She's interested in organic veg, the odd time, loving. I read they were great for constipation because she had piles of a box, bunch of grapes and a box so itchy she put Beckett out of winter. And finally, she gives me a 6-star plan to perfect me. You see, your nails would look great with false tips. My eyes with false lashes, my skin with fake bake, my teeth with fake bleach, my abdomen with fake lunch, my vagina with a sneaky tuck. But my boots are grand. They're grand altogether, loving.
When I was a kid, I had an overactive imagination, let's put it like that. And I had a statue of the Virgin Mary beside me on the up on the mantelpiece beside my bed. And sometimes I would see the statue kind of filling up with light and moving and stuff like that, you know. So one day the Monsignor came to our school and asked us for news, and I said about I'd seen the Virgin Mary moving, and he didn't like it at all, you know, because obviously they have to have a monopoly on, you know, moving statues and stuff. Yeah. I should have fucking set up the moving statues movement. The economy in Banner Street got there before us and made all the money out of it. Okay. Monsignor! I remember you, the way you strode into our classroom, your mouth full of tombstones, your thin lips spouting the grave's punishments. Death strode in beside you with an icy wind, and we felt the corpse's grip within ourselves. One grey afternoon or another, you asked us all for news, and I put up my hand and I told in all sincerity how in my room at night I saw a statue of the Virgin filling up with light. Liar! That blasted little liar's what you said, and then you whacked the wooden ruler off the back of me head, and you whacked again. Liar! Knowing it was not lie or mistake, knowing it was a vision, not a dream, I told again what I had seen, the truth of light in a plastic queen. Impossible! Impossible, you said. Monsignor! I'm still here to peddle dirt. Your 10 years rotting in the ground. 10 years crumbling into earth. I hope you found your mouldy god, but guess you're mostly in the sod. Imagination knows no law. Vision's way will not be barred. The day after you struck me, I pissed in the churchyard.
The title of the book is Where is Katie? And it's sort of a search for Kathleen Nihilon in all different forms, political, personal, private, my own personal experiences as well as from, you know, searching for Ireland in 2010. And I was out with Dave one night, and I don't know if any of you have been to Galway,
There used to be a great pub there called Taylor's. They ran a great writers group there and that. And it's actually now a lap dancing pub, not a club really. And I stormed into it one night. I got really angry that they turned it. Dave gave out to me and told me it wasn't my business, but anyway.
Oh, I didn't.
No, he was very supportive. But they charged me a tenner to storm into it, but. So I really was causing a revolution. But it was actually very sad. I found it very sad in there, and I'm going to read this for Dave. Finding Katie inside a lap dancing pub. I stumbled on the den, peeled on my row face, smashed sweat clear from beneath my weeping eyelids for a better view. A couple of couples sat on the edge of their stools and sipped stale apples. Here she was, moving like the boy in the bubble. They felt her breath through thick, sterile black gloves. Men's eyes ran salty sweat between her bone thighs and hell moisture between her Estonian pupils with fumbling, childlike paws. I'd smash their heads in if she was my sister, even if she said she loved it. If she was my sister, I'd break their beaks with them, they could suck it through a straw. If she were my mother, I'd blow my own brains out. So I weaved and waved to the edge of reason, where martyrs tipped their caps. They barred me. I lost my tenor. They locked their door and hid inside from me. I caught a bounce's conscience in his eyes. It's my home. That's why I have these wings. I caught their eyes. I caught a cold glimpse of Katie at night time. If she were my sister, I'd knife them. Inside this pathetic den, there's a glimpse of Katie in a raw, purple nightie.
I went to an art exhibition in Birr in County Offaly, and it was what was called a site-specific exhibition. Which, if anybody doesn't know what it means that the artists are supposed to make art connected with the place that the art is going to be shown in. It was a workhouse. While I was at the exhibition, I met a nun. And I proceeded to have a discussion with the nun, which turned into an argument with the nun about what had actually happened in the workhouse, and so on. So, this is from my new book, Invitation to a Sacrifice, which I have back here. And it's called Spite Specific. I met a nun today in a workhouse. In a workhouse in Birr. Not a fake nor a phantasmagoric nun, but a real one, a real nun. She was telling me and my musician buddy Aiden about the workhouse system. How it was set up way back in the Blight Age by the British occupiers and later handed on to the Roman ones in order to deal with the problem of poverty. She didn't like it much when I referred to the church as the Romans, and when I started to rant about shaven heads and leather belts and iron rods and unmarked graves and all of the countless tortures inflicted upon the children of the poor in order to deal with the problem of poverty, she got riled and she asked me for my sources. And I said my sources were the words of abused children I had read about and met. And she called those children liars. She actually did. She says, "What do children do, only lie?" And then went on to say that, well, sure, some bad things happened, but there needed to be balance. And I said, the only balance for a dead or an injured child is a knife in the eye. I said the only balance that didn't spit upon the grave of those oppressed infants was the balance of revenge. And I asked her about transubstantiation. I said, "Do you believe in transubstantiation?" And she said she did. And I said, "How could someone who believes in drinking blood and eating flesh every Sunday, how could a fucking cannibal and a vampire like you talk to anyone about their sources. And she walked away. And I knew that I had won. Right there and right then. At that contemporary art exhibition in a workhouse in Burr. Against that rotting old, hypocritical old wanker of a nun.
I'm going to finish up on this one, so thanks for the great audience. This is a poem that was inspired by my dad and some of his friends and people in Athenry, because they blame the Polish for everything in Athenry, so especially all the crashes. The Polish have caused all the crashes in our early. Seriously. the farmers had a little comment about, you know, the influx of new people in the New Ireland. So it's called "The Polish Have Caused a Crash." The Polish have caused a crash on the Boreen between whites and the old house. And Brazilians have opened a new Mexican restaurant beside Malloy's. Even the Chinese chef is giving out. There isn't a car with tax, and not one of the new ones are putting a thing into her economy. Shopping in Aldi. They screw up the new children with their gutter jeans. John Nolan even told me the same thing happened when the farmers mixed the Frisians and the Belgians loose. The unreal moves out of the fuckers. And everyone knew it because they're not true blue. Our new priest has lady collars with tracksuits and bling, pink nails, blow up beds, and he thinks nothing of drinking coffee and mocha beans. At his fucked entirely, we are. We're entirely fucked.
Yeah, Elaine's book is called Where's Katie? We've got it behind us here. My book is called Invitation to Sacrifice. I have a CD as well called Surviving the Recession. Books are 12, two books are 20, and CDs are fiver, etc. So we come up and we can haggle afterwards if you like, okay?
And we have a great marketing manager there.
We'd really like to thank Paul for inviting us, and Paul really for being one of the people dotted around the country who has contributed to establishing the very vibrant, lively, live poetry scene that is now operating around the country. We've seen a lot of it in the last couple of weeks in Galway, Ballykilty, Cork, Dublin, all over. We've had some great crowds and great support from people, and we do intend to return that support to people when we see them and so on and so forth. So thanks everybody who has supported us. As I said on Friday night, we can forget about funding now, as everybody knows, so we've got to rely on ourselves, and this is part of the DIY, you know? So thanks a million, everybody. Okay, Brian Lennon said the recession was over a couple of weeks ago. And I was just saying to Graham that when I heard that, the first thought that came into my head was, I am Elvis. Botswana have won the World Cup. It was a lie of such fucking total insanity. But, recession is my default setting, and I'm actually an expert on surviving recessions. I have survived one recession already. I fucking guarantee you I will survive this one, okay? And listen to my advice. It's called Surviving the Recession. I need everybody to help vote in this one. It's got a chorus. The chorus is a primal scream, okay? Of a low bass tone, okay? So, I know there's different types of primal screams. I do the low bass one, okay? So can we get... Okay, so the chorus is surviving recession. I do three survivings, you do three prime screams, and that's cool. Okay? You got it? Yeah? The best way of surviving the recession is coma. You can let the bills stack up in the hallway while you're on a coma. You won't have to pay for coma services until you wake up. Make love slowly while you're surviving the recession. Otherwise, sleep long and hard using the no dreaming technique. Be avant-garde! Think house alarms and car alarms and sirens and the screaming of victims as music. We are, we are, we are, we are.
beautiful, beautiful, beautiful music.
Marry the checkout boy. It will help with the shoplifting.
Surviving!
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 Surviving the recession. Here are some tried and tested methods of surviving the recession. Long-term fasting. Ransoms. Burglary. Priesthood. Beating the living shit out of the wife and kids. Cough bottles. Valium. Glue. Smoke. Fire lighters. Manchester United. Caravans. Turnips. Pissing in bottles. Cat, dog, and donkey torture. Burning your furniture. Fianna Fáil. Fascism. World wars. The totem animals of surviving the recession are the vulture, the louse, the hyena, the rat, and the politician. They are all identifying very closely with us now. Look right back at them. Ask yourself, why is it that they have survived over so many others, perhaps more beautiful than them?
We are all of us together as one, sharing the pain, knuckling down, sporting the jersey, wearing the badge, licking the whip, making the will, spying the flag up, surviving!
Business must go on. It can't stop itself. To see if you too can make a profit, find yourself some niche perversion, some rarely explored lowland of human degradation, and put it on the market. It's even possible, if you are flexible enough, to find a job while you and all about you is surviving the recession. Study worms for this purpose. Worms are very fucking flexible. And they never complain about limb loss. You ever hear a worm talk about health and safety? Cheap, healthy eating tip. You can grow certain mushrooms between your toes. Cheap, unhealthy eating tip. Collect the tears of your neighborhood and extract the salt. In famine, they can be used to preserve the dead. See below. This is sustainable. Cheap, creepy eating tip. Cannibalism. Mm. Cheap fun, but bad for you drinking tip. There will be plenty of tears to spare. Especially women's and children's. These make a wonderful hooch when distilled. Also, piss whiskey. It may be disgusting, but it's very fucking effective. The patron saint of surviving the recession is Saint Anthony of Padua. Pray to him, and he will immediately rush down from the clouds, abandon his billion other petitioners, and scour the industrial wastelands of our planet looking for your lost job. Stay respectable. Don't laze about at home. Slope out into the world with your laziness. Become a sloth coach. Become the Buddha of sloth. Teach evening classes and give seminars in surviving your recession. Scan the nighttime skies for signs that the galaxy is coming to our aid. You could well be the one that they choose to transmit the new freedoms, the new religions. Yuck! How am I doing, mommy? How am I doing, dad? Am I surviving?
Oh!
Am I surviving?
Oh!
Am I surviving?
Oh! Am I surviving the recession? Share the pain. Share the pain. Heart
as many people as you can. Take advantage of your clone to draw double. Research and write the rise and rise of amateur dentistry. If you become homeless, go and live in the library like everyone else who does. Order multiple copies of the Onionist's cookbook and the Onionist's cookbook. But please do not confuse the two. Do not cook your cock. And do not slide a buttered onion up your slippery ass expecting a burst of colonial joy. Watch out for boredom, depression, tantrums, anxiety, and panic attacks. Keep smoking and drinking and eating crisps and biscuits. Keep the television on. Tie yourself to the remote control. Hug your special teddy bear in between fits of shuddering grief. Be like the moon! Be like the fucking moon! Looking stupid and happy and full upon your monthly outing, showing everyone your bright side, no matter what dark secret things are following you around. Time is change, no matter how you spend it. Look at your ma, your pa, your aunties, your uncles, your granddad, your grandma. Look at all the old folks. Look at how they got on at surviving their recessions. It didn't crush them, did it? Above all, be smart, be wide, be hawkish, be hip to how things are going to pan out in the medium term. Use the spare time while you are surviving! Surviving this recession to prepare yourself for the coming boom boom when you will be doing a totally fucking different kind of surviving. Thank you.